rare, if you're an ecologist and so forth, just huge portions of these natural parks are just being trashed. It's like a big ongoing freeway. So what's happened is a lot of citizens groups saying we're not taking this anymore, and they form their own organizations and say the United States government's not doing its job, so we're going to do it. And the orders that come from on high from the United States government down saying that we're not going to tolerate these vigilante committees. So it's really heating up. Mexico is putting a lot of pressure on the United States to get rid of these vigilante committees, if you will. Are they vigilantes or are they just simply concerned citizens? Well, you're welcome to call in and weigh in, although I see we're getting towards the end of our program here. This is really quite an interesting article. If you would like to go into this in depth, again, worldnetdaily.com. It's on August 17th by John Doherty. And what's happened is the heads of these different groups, we have like Glenn Spencer. Apparently someone was breaking into his garage, so he pulled out a gun and I don't know if he fired in the air or just exactly what happened, but he's the head of a border patrol group. And we've interviewed him a couple times, and quite an interesting fellow. He's just a concerned America about what's going on. I don't think it's accidental what's going on with these borders. I think this is actually happening deliberately. I don't think it's just the greed of the business people that it's happening. I don't think it's the greed of the Democrats for votes why it's happening. I think there's really an agenda that's much deeper than political greed or monetary greed. I think there's the powers that be. We talked about the Council on Foreign Relations and so forth. You might look into why they might want to destroy the border of America. Well, this is Tom Clooney. I'm here every Monday evening from 7 to 8, and keep listening. Thank you.
Okay, I'll look forward to hearing from you tomorrow.
Alrighty.
And that'll be a big help.
Good evening. Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But hold your calls for the time being, because, of course, we have with us on the line from the Washington, D.C. area, Larry Pratt of Gun Owners for America. Hi, Larry. How are you doing?
I'm very well, and it's good to be with you, Stan. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's always good to have you here. And, of course, it's getting a little late back there in Virginia, isn't it?
It's pushing the bedtime, yes,
sir. All right, fine. Well, anyway, of course, the Gun Owners of America is one of those few organizations we have within the conservative Christian camp that has not already been taken over or compromised or distracted from its original goal and purpose, and that was the preserving of our republic and preserving of our freedom And, of course, and it's because the organizations run from the top down. It's not democratic. You get into a democratic organization, it's only a matter of time before these people who talk about preserving our freedom and our republic and our Constitution, and you find out that they're snakes dressed up in street clothes. Well, anyway, certainly that's not true of the gun owners of America, and they're right on the front lines of this battle. And I thought maybe we'd talk a little bit about the USA Patriot Act 1 and Patriot Act 2, and then really whatever else Larry wants to talk about, because there are all sorts of things coming down the line that are aimed at, first of all, taking away our ability to keep and bear arms, and secondly, to take away our freedom. So why don't you sort of bring us up to date with the USA Patriot Act 1 and 2, and then, of course, how this is being used, not necessarily to deal with terrorism. In fact, John Ashcroft has said, well, I'll use this for to track down any sort of criminal. And he even quoted, I think it was Bobby Kennedy, who was talking about the mafia, why he'd arrest him for spitting on the streets. Well, I believe that our people in government have to abide by the laws. If they don't like somebody, they don't like what they're saying, why they don't have a right to go after them, except according to our constitutional guarantees.
Well, Stan, the Patriot Act, which certainly goes after our privacy in a rather aggressive way, comes out of a context from the Clinton administration. They had a number of proposals that we now have identified as the Patriot Act that was put forth after the 1995 explosion in Oklahoma City. And it was as if they had this stuff on the shelf, ready to go, waiting for a crisis, because once it happened, within days, all this incredibly intrusive set of powers for the government was being proposed. We were able to hack away a fair amount of it at that time, but we knew that even though we had had some successes, that they were just going to put it back on the shelf and wait for the next opportunity.
Well, I would have expected that if Clinton was still in office, but why did the Bush administration give us the Clinton plan or the Clinton program?
Well, some people have said they thought that the September 11 attack seemed to change Ashcroft overnight. Well, perhaps not. I don't know him that well, but what I can tell you is that what didn't change overnight, and to my knowledge hasn't changed to this day, are the Clintonistas in the Justice Department, the attorneys who are, if you will, on an organization chart above the FBI. They're the ones that direct it for the Attorney General, for the administration. And these folks are the same ones now that were there before. I found this out when I was talking to an FBI agent, and I was complaining to him that his agency had been so politically correct, so fascinated with the vast right-wing conspiracy that Clinton had sold the country on, as the cause of the climate that led to the 1995 Oklahoma City explosion, that they were so fixated on that when plane loads full of Islamic radicals flew right past their nose, they still didn't get it. And they were still writing reports about the vast right-wing conspiracy and its threat to the stability of the country, and that they were in denial almost a year later when an Egyptian went and shot up the El Al ticket counter, killed, I don't know, 2-3 people before he was finally taken down, and immediately the FBI says, this was not a terrorist attack. Well, they had to kind of pull back a little bit when it turned out that in Egypt he'd belonged to Al-Qaeda. So they're just going to do whatever they think is politically correct, and it doesn't really have anything to do with law enforcement. Not that they have any law enforcement authority under our Constitution in the FBI anyway, but even if, you know, given that little objection, it doesn't seem to bother anybody here in Washington. If they were going to act like real cops, they would have certainly tried to focus on the more likely suspect, but that's been called profiling. So they're really trapped. It's okay to profile the conservative movement, but you can't profile the real threat to the country. So go figure. Well, anyway, that all of this nastiness was sitting there waiting to go for the next crisis. That, of course, was September 11, and out it came. wiretapping abilities without effective court approval, getting into people's homes and putting devices on their computers to track what they were doing. And of course, we've heard stories of these agents going into libraries and trying to get the list of things that people were reading. And this is only going to get worse if Patriot 2 comes, because the little distinction that there is in the present Patriot 1 between terrorism and regular crime, which of course the federal government has no jurisdiction for anyway, outside of postal fraud and counterfeit and treason and piracy. Those are the four things mentioned in the Constitution the federal government has legitimate original jurisdiction for. And anything else, the murder of a public official, the carrying of somebody across state lines for either immoral purposes or kidnap or whatever, none of that exists in the Constitution. All these are noble things, but if the states really needed help, they have the power to compact among themselves.
But you know, the thing that really bothers me, Larry, is that there's not one word in the USA Patriot Act 1 or USA Patriot Act 2 that mentions Islamic terrorism. And they've redefined terrorism so it could include any American citizen. And I don't believe this has anything to do with terrorism. I think it has to do with a massive increase in police state power of the federal government, which is what our founding fathers feared.
Correct.
And which Thomas Jefferson had said, when the day comes when, of course, all power shall be centralized in Washington, D.C., we will have a government as venal as the one from which we have just recently been removed. So, you know, until the American people understand they're really not concerned about Islamic terrorism, we're simply being manipulated. And that's really the message I think we need to get out.
That is very clearly, and it's a pattern of government, not just our own, but just about any government you might care to study, that crisis provides the opportunity for aggrandizing the powers of the government, and sometimes it's sold as temporary, sometimes it's just sold not even as temporary, but as necessary for the survival of the society as we know it. And of course it's that as we know it part that's so Orwellian, because when they're finished, it won't be as we knew it, it'll be very different. As you say, it'll be all that power concentrated at the center in Washington, D.C. And so they're working to a point where they could simply say, what you said about the government is so inflammatory, so derogatory, to bring disrespect upon the government or whatever they might want to come up with, that could be called terrorism. And they could simply remove your civil liberties at the stroke of a pen, and you would have no lawyer, you would have no known address, they'd have you incommunicado, they could have you as long as they want, not filing any charges, they wouldn't have to prove their case in a court of law in an adversarial situation, they could just haul you off and shut you up.
And of course, what they really want to do is do away with the right of habeas corpus,
which this would do, exactly.
Basic guarantees, so that they can't do that, because this is what they do in totalitarian countries. And what I think the most people have the hardest time believing is there really are people who would like to do that here. There really are people who believe in elite rule, who, of course, have the idea that, as Plato had written 2,400 years ago, we need a ruling oligarchy, and, of course, the people and these ideas of our Constitution get in the way. In fact, Richard Gardner, a Rhodes Scholar, had written in April of 1994 how, of course, we're going to have to do an end run around the Constitution using all these international treaties and agreements, because why? Because the Constitution protects the rights of the people, and that is, of course, what the elite don't want. Richard Gardner, member of the Council on Foreign Relations, Rhodes Scholar, ambassador to Spain, I believe, under the Clinton administration. One of these elitists, and so many more, writing in Foreign Affairs magazine, which is a theoretical journal of the Council on Foreign Relations. Well, Larry, as you see this thing going down now, we got Patriot Act 1 through. And of course, they said, "Oh, but that, you know, this is there's no Patriot Act 2. This is as far as we're going," and they were lying again, weren't they?
Well, it's kind of like the fox sitting inside the chicken coop, and when the farmer asked the chickens how they're doing, "Well, nobody in here but us chickens." And I think the farmer better take a closer look.
Right.
He's not going to have any more chickens. So the Patriot Act, too, definitely was drawn up, and it was circulated to a limited number of people, and somebody with an awful lot of integrity and guts leaked it, and I hope we never find out who it was, because their job is toast if they're discovered. But we owe them a lot, because, you know, sometimes when something... See, Patriot Act 2 might not look so bad to a lot of people after the next crisis. But right now, when we're having second thoughts about Patriot 1, when the chairman of the Judiciary Committee is saying, I think we went too far, we're not going to let these things be renewed that we've sunset in it, and maybe we ought to take some more out of it that weren't sunset, you know, Patriot 1 is in a small amount of trouble. This is the time to hit Patriot 2 and to tell them that they really got themselves in a bad situation if they push any farther, because they need to back off. They need to respect the rule of law, a phrase that is easily tossed about in Washington, seldom understood as that idea that the law is truly above judges, above bureaucrats, above elected officials. They can't do what they want because there are some things in a republic that are viewed as God-given and are simply immutable and can't be touched, and other things can only be changed with great effort with a three-quarters vote. Now, you mentioned this notion about treaties being the lever for all kinds of bad things. And we've seen this in the environmental area with a vengeance. A treaty is signed, and that's used as a justification to say, well, now that's the law of the land. Well, that's not the law of the land, because treaties can only be enacted under the authority of the United States. And if the United States government doesn't have authority to get into an endangered species treaty, then the Endangered Species Act, which is based on treaties, is a nullity and should be overturned. Now, I'm the gun guy. I'm from Gun Owners of America, and I watched how these encroachments are coming in other areas, and all I have to think for a minute is, wait a minute, what has the UN been doing for the last 10, 15 years? They're having a twice annual conclave of the thugs that run various countries trying to figure out how they can keep guns out of the hands of what they call non-state actors. You know, people like the Sudanese People's Liberation Army that's trying to protect itself against the jihad of the Islamic government of the north. The Islamic government's trying to wipe out all the Christians and non-Muslims in the south. And the UN would try to keep guns out of their hands. I think we ought to be selling them guns myself. But in any case, they would try to get to treaties that would require the United States to set up a registration system that would mesh with other countries and be transparent to the United Nations. That's about one short step away from confiscation, as we saw it in England. And although they haven't had genocide there in the 5 years since they confiscated guns, we sure saw it in a whole bunch of countries in the last century. And so to allow the UN to come along and play into this notion that, well, you know, if your government, that say the next Clinton administration, you know, Hillary, that sort of Clinton, were to sign a treaty and the Congress, the Senate, were to ratify the treaty that the United States would participate in these gun control schemes under the way they've misinterpreted the Constitution, that would be it. We're toast.
And I think people have to understand, as wicked as Saddam Hussein was, an awful lot of the people there in Iraq had guns. And in fact, we want to take the guns away from the people. We're there to liberate the people of Iraq, and we want to take the weapons away. This is the only means they have of protecting their homes and their wives from the chaos that we have brought upon that nation. Now, people say, well, we had to get rid of the wicked Saddam Hussein. Well, of course, if anybody reads my newsletters, you'll know that time and time again, the Iraq military tried to overthrow Saddam Hussein, and time again, we betrayed them, and you're never going to hear that on CBS or NBC, but read my March newsletter for this year. It's up on the web at radioliberty.com. At least on two occasions, according to Robert Byrd, who was a CIA agent working in Kurdistan in 1993 and again in 1995, why the Iraqi military wanted and tried and was ready to overthrow the wicked Saddam Hussein. And, of course, who came to his help? It wasn't, of course, the Iraqi people. It was the U.S. State Department. And then, of course, we kept him in power by allowing to smuggle oil out of there. And this is all brought out in the wonderful book we carry called See No Evil, written by a CIA agent. And then, of course, we move in, and we are going to restore freedom. And first thing we're going to do is disarm the people to restore freedom. We can't even restore electricity. We can't even restore water. But we're there to help the people. Well, I think there are an awful lot of people over there. As much as they hated Saddam Hussein, I think there's a tremendous hatred for America, not only in Iraq, but all throughout the world. And you couldn't do such a poor job unintentionally.
Well, Stan, the thing that really has... those of us here at Gun Owners of America and others watching that situation is the really hard to understand, hard to explain position of the administration allowing finally, after an initial effort to confiscate Iraqis' firearms, realizing there were too many to succeed, and furthermore, they did concede that maybe they needed them for security purposes. So they're allowing Iraqis to maintain possession of fully automatic military machine gun AK-47 rifles. Whereas here in the United States, the George Bush administration is saying, I will renew a ban if it comes to my desk before next September of 2004 when the ban expires. I'll renew that ban on those semi-automatic rifles that not one military in the world owns or uses.
Now tell me, what does that ban actually do?
The ban says that a number of firearms, primarily defined by cosmetic features, after the September date in 1994, are not permitted for civilian ownership. So if you've got a semi-automatic rifle, say a Ruger Ranch rifle, that is a very widely owned rifle. It fires basically a .22 on steroids. But you can get that thing banned if you change the cosmetics of it.
Now, of course, I mean, you can't own one.
That's right. You wouldn't be able to own it if it were made after a certain date and then you retrofitted it with a folding stock or a flash suppressor or something like that.
Well, but if you owned one before, why, it was perfectly all right then.
You can keep it, right.
Now, for now, but of course they intend to disarm the American people, because of course this is the tool that tyrants have always used. In fact, that's why they, well, we'll talk about it when we get back here in just a moment. Our guest is Larry Pratt from Gun Owners of America. We welcome your calls of 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan. You know, tyrants have always wanted to disarm their people. And in fact, one reason, of course, that they developed martial arts and various types of fighting in China and Japan was because the tyrants were always disarming the people. And of course, this was the only means that they had then of protecting themselves. And you can go back throughout history. I mean, they at times they would take the spears and the swords away from the populace to enslave them. The reason that the American Revolution came about was the Redcoats were marching on Lexington to take the armory, to take the weapons away from the that area. And, of course, that was on the route came the bridge at Concord, where the shot was fired that was heard around the world. But, you know, the American people don't understand. There really are people who want a dictatorship. You read the Terrorist Act, one of the things it stipulates is a terrorist is someone who wants to change our form of government. Well, that's the Council on Foreign Relations. Now, that is these elite people, the George Shultzes of the world. Incidentally, he's Arnold Schwarzenegger's number two man, number two advisor. And, of course, the other people within this elite group, the Dick Cheneys, the Condoleezza Rice, the Colin Powell, these people who believe that they're so much smarter than the rest of us and the elite should rule. So they really should be labeled as terrorists, but does anybody really think that because they want to change our form of government that they're going to be labeled as terrorists? And, of course, what we need to do is get people to understand that liberty and limited government are synonymous and tyranny and total government are synonymous. We have to limit the power of the federal government. That was the secret of America. That is why our nation was different than other nations. Our freedoms came from God. Governments were instituted to protect our God-given freedoms, and the secret to our concept of federalism was checks and balances, not only within the federal government itself, between the federal and the state government, and the state and the local government, because every state was to be a republic, not a democracy, and for a time we were free. But that is no longer taught in our schools today. And, you know, in the new No Child Left Behind program, which is being foisted upon the American people by the current administration, they simply leave out any mention of the true significance of the Second Amendment. Well, Larry, are there any new bits of legislation? I keep hearing rumbles about some efforts on the part of United Nations treaties for universal disarmament. Is there anything in the hopper that we should know about?
It's a continuing problem, and it's something that just at the end of last month, Bob Barr, former congressman from Georgia, attended the latest meeting up in New York at the UN, where they were continuing to work on developing what they call an international instrument, which would be the International Gun Registry. And the United States was represented 2 years ago by John Bolton, who gave a fairly strong rebuke to the UN, could have gone farther, but told them to keep their hands off our Second Amendment, basically. And this year, Lincoln Bloomfield, who I don't know my CFR list as well as I know you do, but I'm pretty sure if I looked, he'd probably be on one of those lists. He's a State Department hierarch, and he was gushing as to how much the United States supported the objectives that were being pursued at these twice-a-year meetings. So it seems to me that after a brief, tentative, hesitant detour, the United States government is now pursuing a fuzzy course of action.
So we're going to have to interrupt you here because we've got to bring our guest back from the Great Northwest. Well, Dr. Stan back here, and our guest this evening is, of course, Larry Pratt, and we're talking about, of course, how the current administration, the way of Mr. Bloomfield, representative of the United Nations or spokesman on arms issues, is really saying that America is embracing this idea of world disarmament under the United Nations, which is, of course, has always been the plan. They will unite the world. Everybody will be disarmed, except, of course, for the military and the police, who are to keep the people in line. And, of course, the ruling elite, they'll always have their guns and their protectors. Don't believe for one minute that, of course, the rulers are not going to have bodyguards, armed bodyguards, whether it be Rosie O'Donnell or certainly the people within our administration.
Or Kofi Annan, for that matter,
right,
who saw fit to bring into New York City totally illegal firearms for his protection, namely fully automatic submachine guns, and it looks as if our government might actually, at least they're making the noises as if they're going to make him get rid of them, but the attitude has been shown very clearly, exactly what you're saying. We in the elite are above the law, and we must be protected because we're more important than you are, so that's why we still need a few guns around just so we make sure that you peasants don't get across the moat.
And, of course, the whole idea of George Bush is doing everything he can to block the arming of airline pilots. And, we've been trying to get the airline pilots armed for almost 2 years. I think there are 100 now that have gotten through the classes. They keep delaying the classes or coming up with another reason why we can't have the classes. We'll get around to it one of these days. But you can be sure that there are armed people on the president's plane. And, of course, you know, they're taking the marshals off of the civilian airliners. At the same time, they're telling us that Al-Qaeda is planning to hijack our airliners and commit more atrocities. Now, what's wrong with this picture? I mean, either they know that Al-Qaeda is not planning on hijacking the planes, or they're leaving our planes vulnerable. There's no other logical explanation. But then, of course, when they knew, as of August 6th of 2001, they were planning on hijacking our planes, then why didn't they immediately arm the pilots? Why didn't they immediately put marshals on those planes or even the National Guard? Because they knew it was going to happen. And I just completed reading this ridiculous 900-page report that came out from the Joint Intelligence Committee. And, you know, you hear about the 26 pages that was, or 28 pages that were censored. The first 200 pages of that report, I went to it this morning, the first 200 pages, 75 of those 200 pages had something censored on them, and that had nothing to do with the 28 pages. That thing is so full of holes. The only thing, I even count the pages, and you can't even trust that, because they put together a report with no index. You can't even use the table of contents, because every individual section is independently numbered, so you can't go through and find a specific page. You know, they've done everything they could to make a report that would be totally useless to anybody who's researching, and then they censored out anything that was worthwhile. If there's nothing to conceal, why are they concealing it?
Well, Stan, if they didn't have all those things cut out of the report, how in the world would you ever have time to read a 900-page report?
I mean, it is the most, I mean, I'm
they're just, they put it for your best interest. Yeah. You asked the question about the airline pilots, and, it could even be up to 150 by now. They may be cracking them out there at the rate of 50 every 2 weeks. So by the time our grandchildren are dead, it may be that all the present pilots might have been armed.
Now, by that time, they'll be dead, too.
Exactly. Now, I've been reading the Colombian press, Colombia, South America, and a guy got elected there almost a year ago today, Alvaro Uribe, and one of his campaign planks was that he was going to arm the people out in the country where they have been suffering particularly from the narco-terrorists, the left-wing ones particularly, they call it the FARC for its Spanish acronym, Armed Forces for Colombia. And this thing is such a contrast to the United States and the TSA. The TSA, let's give them 150 pilots in a half a year. They've already put 26,000 of these newly trained guys out in the countryside in Colombia, a third world country.
Well, I think we really got problems in America today. And the American trouble is the American people really don't understand what's going on, because they listen to ABC, CBS, and NBC, and their news is all filtered before it ever gets to them. So that's why programs such as this are so vitally important, and why having guests on like Larry Pratt are so important. We're going to be back in just a moment. And if you have a question or comment for Larry, he's on the front lines of this battle trying to preserve our right to keep and bear arms. Why? Because, of course, the first thing the tyrant does is to disarm the population. They know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to know. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and our special guest today is Larry Pratt. And before I forget, Larry, why don't you tell our listeners how they can get in touch with Gun Owners of America and get your information, get, of course, your emails, get your access to your website, and keep advised as to what's really going on back in Washington, D.C.
Well, thank you. I would be very happy to tell people that. Our website is gunowners.org. That's plural. One word, gunowners.org. And I would encourage you, if you can get on the web, to go there, because you can sign up for our email alerts. That's a free list to join, and it will give you one, maybe two alerts a week that are not only informative, but they're designed to make it very easy to take action so that the Congress critters can feel the heat from the folks back home, know what the people who have control over their reelection are thinking about. And that's how we have, by the grace of God, been able to stop some of the assaults on our liberties in the Second Amendment arena particularly because of those email battles that we've been able to conduct. If you can't do that, then you can get information about Gun Owners of America at Gun Owners at 888-888-6-GUNS. That's 888-886-GUNS. We'll send you the newsletter that we send to our members. We're $20 a year, but we certainly wouldn't discourage larger contributions. And that newsletter provides information as well about what's going on, and the mailings will include postcards and ways that you can remain in the fight, being active, so that the folks here in Washington have at least some contact with the reality and the folks back home. We are an action organization. We do need members, and that's what the members are all about. They are part of the solution to the problems here in Washington.
And, of course, the Gun Owners does a tremendous job. I'd just like to comment very, very briefly. We were talking earlier about how, you know, there's an incident of some sort, and immediately comes a call for a whole new series of laws. Certainly, we had the blackout. Now, nobody knows why the blackout was, but what are they saying? Oh, we've got to get through the Bush energy Bush energy legislation that was presented 2 years ago. We hear about another sniper somewhere there on the East Coast. Oh, we're going to have gun legislation. We saw the first sniper and they got away with it. We got to take the guns away from the people to protect them from the wicked snipers. Nobody ever comments that maybe if the people were armed and somebody could shoot at the sniper when they saw him making a fast getaway, that of course we might save an awful lot of lives. But no. I mean, whenever there's a problem, why, there's always got to be a new series of federal laws.
Yes.
Let me tell you, there's no problem facing America today that more federal legislation won't make worse. I mean, we've seen it time again, whether it be the tax codes, whether it be the practice of medicine, whether it be the vaccination scams or whatever it would be. This is what our founding fathers feared, was the all-powerful federal government answerable to no one but to bureaucrats, and no matter how well-meaning they may be, why, of course, they're going to be looking after, first of all, their own jobs, their own power structure, and their own pensions. And so it's about time we understood that the secret of America was to limit the power of the federal government, but they just never teach that in school any longer, do they?
No, they do not. And in fact, those ideas are pretty much being scrubbed out of our textbooks because of the growth of federal standards for curriculum that have teeth in them. And I have certainly seen it in the area that I'm most interested in, namely teaching civics and history, because it's in these areas that people would understand liberty in general, freedom in a Republican government under a constitution, under God, or whether they just have some vague notion that, gosh, with 51% and if everybody feels good about it, we can just do it because that's the way the times are now. And those are the two basic world views that are at play. The national standards go for the latter. They have produced guidelines, and they've produced a textbook which is funded by the federal government called We the People. And the idea of individual rights and natural rights in general and natural law, let alone God, none of those things are being dealt with. The kids are going to come out thinking that, as you've been pointing out several times this evening, that the government is the only legitimate place for anything to be done, and somehow you're a better person when you go to work for the government, and that's just great. Now, the way this works, these guidelines, quote-unquote, as they're called in the law, increasingly are standards because schools are going to have to teach to these tests to make sure that the students can pass them. If the students don't, the Federal Department of Education is threatening the loss of the subsidy that the states and the local school systems get from the federal government. And so, your taxes and mine are being used to whipsaw us into whatever policy direction the folks in Washington want us to go, and pity is that so many of our politicians at the state and local level are so easily swayed that a subsidy of somewhere between 2 and 8% of their entire education budget is enough to get them to say, oh, okay, whatever you say, we'll do anything you want. Oh, no, don't take that money away. No, 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 we need that money. Well, actually, they don't need that money. I'm happy to report that the state of Minnesota recently ducked out of these. They just said goodbye to the federal curriculum standards for civics and history. And it was a fascinating debate. I saw an excerpt of what had occurred on the Senate floor after the House had passed this goodbye measure, setting Minnesota's own standards to require the teaching of natural law, natural rights, the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, things like that. And it passed the House of Representatives in an overwhelming vote. When it went to the Senate, it went into a committee first before going to the floor. And when it came out of committee, one of the senators was asking the committee chairman, well, how come the Declaration of Independence got dropped out? And how come national sovereignty got dropped out of the requirements for state standards? And how come natural rights got dropped out? And he said, well, it was just the result of a compromise.
Well, of course, I think it's so vitally important. Anybody who'd like, of course, to get the background of this, we have a four-tape set called Fed Ed. That's Fed Ed. We have a book that goes with it called Fed Ed, written by Alan Quist, who, along with his wife and Senator Michelle Bachmann, the Senate of Minnesota, are really the major force behind doing away or eliminating those standards from Minnesota. Now, of course, you have to realize there are people who hate our Constitution, who hate freedom, and that's why, of course, they don't want these things taught to our children. That's why if you love your children, you get them out of government schools, and you get them into some sort of a training program where they can learn the secret of America's freedom. And that, of course, was to limit the power of government and, of course, to adhere to the concept of natural law and that our freedoms came from God, not from government. A unique idea in the history of mankind. What a terrible tragedy it is that the American people have lost that dream. Well, our job, of course, is to try to rekindle that flickering flame of freedom, which seems to be about to be extinguished, but it will only be extinguished if we allow it to be. And there are people like Larry out across America trying to bring this message to the American people, to an understanding that, of course, there are those on one hand who have a different worldview, and then the vast majority of people in this country want to be free. The thing is that they've forgotten that liberty and limited government are synonymous, and that when you have a total control, you have total loss of freedom and tyranny. So, Larry, how are we doing? Are we making any headway? Are people beginning to wake up across America? Because I know you're talking to audiences all across America on a regular basis.
Stan, it's hard for me to say. The best thing I can tell you is that maybe we have fought things in some ways to a standstill. We're losing in some places. We've made some limited progress in some other ways. Maybe it's like any other major vast battle in history. You don't really know how you're doing at the time you're fighting, but you know that if you stop fighting, sure enough, what's guaranteed to happen. I do know that there's a rising, amazing to me, there's a rising conservatism among I guess they call them Generation Y, even on social issues. They're the people that are coming out of high school and college now, they're more conservative, and that's perhaps why even a NARAL survey showed a slight majority of people preferring the pro-life position generally than the pro-death position. And I'm just amazed that that would happen after so much indoctrination.
NARAL, that's the National Abortion Rights Organization.
Action League, yeah. Yeah, so one of the major pro-abortion groups conducted their own professional survey, asking the question, I'm sure, in the most favorable way to them that they possibly could, and bingo. Now, there's something analogous going on in the Second Amendment area. In 1994, the Democrats lost control of the Congress over the firearms issue, the Brady Law and the semi-auto ban, and in 2000, kind of based on that and building from it, Al Gore told people how they needed to have their guns registered and they needed to be licensed. Well, that cost him the election, and that's become a matter of political accepted fact, and you've got Democrats backing away, with some exceptions like Charlie Schumer and Dianne Feinstein, but by and large, the Democrats don't want to go there. And
yeah, but we've got the Republicans leading the charge. We've got
the
Bush administration going right along with all of these left-wing socialist fascist concepts. So what's wrong with George Bush? Why has he betrayed the people, his constituents, who he promised to support gun rights for?
I think he's put himself into a politically difficult position because I think I see what he thought he was doing. He thought he was going to be throwing a bean into the soccer mom jar saying, look, I gave you something, and at the same time telling gun owners, look, I'm not going to push for this thing, and it's not likely to get to my desk, so don't worry about it. And implied in that, if you tell them that you think that's a pretty rotten thing to say, and you don't appreciate the immorality of that, they'll say, well, you guys don't have any place to go.
Well, I think it's about time that they realize I would far rather have an enemy that I know than an enemy that pretends to be my friend and then betrays me.
Well, I'll tell you, I think they're beginning to figure out that you didn't speak for yourself. Within days of this position of the president's becoming known, his primary advisor, principal advisor, Karl Rove, no doubt the author of this wonderful idea, went up to New Hampshire and spoke at a university, a college. In the audience was one of our members, and I would just call him Sam, who asked a question during the question and answer period, something along the lines of, Mr. Rove, what in the world is the president thinking of doing that when the gun vote is what gave him his narrow victory in 2000? And that's not something that's generally politically debated. The only people who don't like to hear that are the ones over at the Brady campaign to stop gun violence and other gun control, anti-self-defense groups. Well, Rove gave the answer that this was just a kind of a political move, and he didn't expect to see anything come of it. And, of course, Sam didn't like that. And so he waited around until things cleared up, and Rove was on his way back to the limo to go to the airport, and there were a few people doing the same thing. Well, Sam was the last one to get a hold of Rove before he ducked into the limo, and he said, I didn't like your answer inside. And Rove just got furious and grabbed Sam by his arm and said, by the way, here's the facts of life. If you don't like it, tough. And Sam said, I'm taller and I'm older than he. And I grabbed his arm and I said, listen, you tell your boss if he signs that bill, he's crossed the line. And Rove didn't know what to say. He was furious and I think somewhat startled by that sort of cold resolve in the voice of gun owners. These are not people like the sugar beet lobby or some other lobby that wants more money from the taxpayer, and if he only gets half of what he's asking for, he's still got more than he had before. The gun owner doesn't look at freedom that way. He looks at it increasingly, I believe, as indivisible. And if part of it's taken, that just means that they've made it easier to grab the rest in some near future when we're not looking as carefully. And so a lot of us have begun to say, no more. No deals, no more, don't take anything. Let's start talking about, what are you going to give us back? What are we going to get rid of the Brady Law? What about the 1968 Gun Control Act? And that was kind of the attitude that Sam was bringing to the table. Don't tell me how you're going to renew a theft of our freedom. I came here to hear you celebrate freedom and tell me how we're going to make it better, not worse.
Well, I think that people have to understand that George Bush, I believe, is controlled by exactly the same people that control the Democrat administration. In fact, there was an article in the recent U.S. News and World Report, about they were prepping the president for a press conference. And, of course, they were afraid to have him get up in front of the press and have him ask questions that he wouldn't be able to answer them. And so they gave him all the answers, all the questions they thought would be asked. And then, of course, they told him which of the reporters to ask. And then they gave the reporters the questions to ask and only gave him 90 minutes beforehand. So they couldn't really work up difficult questions because they're afraid to put George W. Bush in front of a group of people and have him ask honest questions. So they're going to have him just ask preconceived questions he can read the answers to. That's a tragic situation when the man who heads the most powerful nation in the world, can't get up in front of an audience and a press conference and give legitimate answers, who has to be told the answers, you know, that, of course, will not create problems. I think that maybe we better start thinking about a third political party, because I think that's the one thing that they fear more than anything else. They're able to control both parties, but if there are more parties out there, why, of course, they're going to have to, well, this right here in California, I believe that they're running several candidates on the Republican ticket to block a real honest-to-goodness conservative, Tom McClintock, and then they've got Bustamante in the race here. I'd rather have Bustamante, who I know is my enemy, than somebody else who proposes to be a conservative and really is not.
Well, and if it's not somebody like Tom McClintock, I'm not sure I understand how he could get the job done, would have the resolve to cut the amount of government that needs to be cut. And it goes back to George Bush. You know, they wouldn't have to prep any president as much. If the government were within its constitutional limits, it would be very difficult to ask the president something that he didn't know about the government, because the government wouldn't be doing as much as it is now. It wouldn't be, you know, they wouldn't need as much Malox here in Washington. It'd just be much nicer.
I don't know if you've ever heard the story, but at one time there were a group of conservative Christian leaders that interviewed the president to be. This was in 1999, before he got the nomination. And I was sitting next to John Stormer, who I'm sure you know.
Yes.
And, of course, I asked the president how he felt about outcome-based education. Oh, he said, I oppose that. I kept that out of Texas. Actually, he had brought it in by executive order. I knew that. So he wasn't telling the truth. But John Stormer asked him a question. He said, if you were the president, governor, if you were elected president, and of course they were to, Congress was to pass a law dealing with education or commerce that was unconstitutional, would you sign that legislation? Well, of course, they had prepped George Bush on all the questions were going to be asked him. Are you a Christian? How do you feel about God? How do you feel about taxes? How do you feel about defense? All of these regular things. But when John Stormer asked him that question, if he would sign a bill that was unconstitutional, he sat there and said, I don't understand the question. So John said, well, I'll simplify it then. If you were asked to sign a piece of legislation on education that was unconstitutional, would you sign it? And he said, I'll have to think about that. Well, you wonder why we're in trouble today?
Well, in fact, on the campaign finance bill that John McCain and some others pushed through the Congress, the president at one point was saying if any one of six items, features, provisions are in that bill, I'll veto it. And it went to his desk and it had all six, not just any one of them, all six. And he sat there with his pen in hand saying, well, I have constitutional reservations about this bill, but I'm going to sign it. And thank you, George Bush, that's cost Gun Owners of America well over $100,000 in legal fees and still counting.
I know you bring a lawsuit because basically this is to block. I mean, they're still going to let, of course, the corporations give all the money they want to. This is really aimed at keeping organizations such as yours from printing the voting record of the congressman within 60 days of the election. That's the most incredible abridgment of the right of freedom of speech I've ever heard.
And press, because imagine, a political committee that Gun Owners of America has set up is limited to receive up to but only $5,000 from an individual such as yourself or anybody else, and in turn we can only contribute to a campaign of a candidate $5,000. Okay, now just keep those two fives in mind. Imagine that if the Washington Post or any of the other large media corporations who are exempt from the law were not exempt from these campaign restrictions, they would then only, if they wanted to talk about how good or bad George Bush is or how good or bad Jesse Helms is or, you know, fill in the blank, they would only be able to spend $5,000 talking about it, and they would only be able to have stockholders who had $5,000 shares maximum. Boy, I think they would be on our side real quickly if the laws were applied equally across the board, restricting everybody's freedom of press. Basically, campaigns are, most of what goes on in a campaign is to publish the views of the candidates and the people supporting the candidates to the public so the public has that information. Whether it's done electronically or on a printing press, it doesn't matter. That's all press freedom. And you know, what I'm afraid we're going to see is the court depart from a long series of precedents where they have ruled that the freedom of press applies to individuals, even to solicitors going door to door on behalf of a religious organization. There was a case like that last year. But they're acting like they don't want to hear this because the Ron Paul Gun Owners of America group of plaintiffs that are litigating right now have gone after not just the new law of John McCain, but the law we've suffered under for over 25 years, limiting how much we can participate, how much we can print of our views or espouse over, you know, television ads or whatever it might be. And they're all of a sudden going to realize, oh, golly, if we follow all our precedents for decades and decades and decades and decades, we're going to let all these little people start informing each other what's going on in government, and that might make the government look bad, and we don't want the government to look bad.
Well, my understanding is that some of the courts have held, well, we're really not going to do what this thing was purported to do, and that was, of course, to limit the soft money. They're going to, a lot of that is going to continue,
under
one guise or another. This is all about limitation of information, and that's why, you know, what you do on the radio and what I do on the radio is important. At least they haven't stopped us from doing that yet, although they probably will down the line, because, of course, this is all to give the idea, well, we elect our duly elected representatives. No, we elect the people that they run for office. They give us a choice of two candidates, and we vote for the candidate of their choice, and over and over and over again. And, of course, when you try to get somebody in there to challenge that, then they come up with all these rules and regulations. Why would anybody object to the voting record of a congressman being published, you know, by a private organization within 60 days of election? Unless, of course, the government is trying to keep the people in power still in power.
Absolutely. This is so absurd that if Gun Owners of America were to go to a congressman and say, would you sign a letter about the bill that you have sponsored? We would like to spend money educating people in districts across the country about how important your bill is. And in the past, the congressman could say, yes, I'll do that. Today, the congressman is prohibited from doing that about a piece of legislation because even if it were 2 years or 5 years out before the representative or Senate election, the idea in this new law is, well, that might influence a campaign later on and give a good or bad impression of that incumbent who would be a candidate, and that's a political expenditure, and so you can't do that. You can only do it with these $5,000 limitations imposed on you.
Yeah, but what about the hundreds of thousands? I mean, George Bush is getting millions and millions. I mean, they're talking about $100 million he's going to raise, you know, for his election campaign. You mean to tell me that's all coming in $1,000 contributions?
That's what they would have us believe. If it's going directly to a political campaign, the most that could be coming in would be $5,000 at a crack.
No, but, of course, it's going into the Republican Party, and then, of course, it'll be spent by the Republican Party to back the candidates the Republican Party wants elected. And anybody who speaks for the people or represents the people can be assured of one thing, and that is they're not going to get a cent.
No, and if they step out of line, the Federal Election Commission will be all over them, and the way the establishment media will handle it is, oh, there's the corruption. See, that's why we needed the law. These people are trying to do something fishy. Yeah, they were trying to do something fishy. They were trying to educate the public about what's going on.
And when they send one innocent man to prison, as they did with Congressman Don Hansen, of course, who was an honest man from the state of Idaho, and that they persecuted him, they tortured him in prison, and he had the scars to prove it. And of course, 10 years later, they suddenly said, oops, see, we never should have sent him to prison. It was a violation of the law. We're going to let him out. Ladies and gentlemen, he was sent to prison not because he'd committed a crime, but because he was a thorn in the side of the Reagan administration. And that was the truth of the matter. And the Reagan administration allowed this innocent man to be sent to prison, one of the leaders of Congress, great supporter of most of the things the Reagan administration was doing. But and of course, he's not the only congressman who's been sent to prison on trumped-up charges where FBI has had sting operations to get congressmen because, of course, they didn't like what they were doing. That is a frightening thing to happen. And yet, how can we maintain our freedom when the American people don't seem to be concerned?
And why should they be concerned with the information that they're being given? And that's why, at the end of the day, I think you and I both probably agree that politically, the biggest challenge in our country is what's being done in the government schools to produce people that just won't care and won't know about the freedoms that are being taken away. Another one of the very insidious things is the kind of training like Pavlov's dog, so that people will wait for some kind of stimulus before they give any kind of response. They won't think on their own, to the point that I can just imagine somebody and a group of people in a burning building, and until somebody comes along and says, okay, you go get a bucket of water, and you go put the towel on the floor, and you go do, you know, they'll just sit there and wait for somebody, and hopefully they'll get there before they all burn to death.
That's a B.F. Skinner operant conditioning method that they're using in our schools today. And that's all covered in our four-tape set on FedEd. Larry, we're just about out of time. Always a fascinating program. What are your parting thoughts for our listeners tonight?
Well, Stan, I think people ought to realize we're in this for the long haul. And if they've been getting tired and feeling burned out, remember that the founders of our country went through the same types of experiences, and that's why they thought that eternal vigilance was the price of liberty. That's a long time, folks, eternity. We're not going to have eternity to fight it here on this earth, but we're going to have a long time, and as long as there's an earth around, we're going to have to be fighting folks that are going to be trying to control us. So hang in there. Don't let them wear you down.
We used to have an old saying, it was illegitimitas non carborundum. It was never let the bastards drive you down, grind you down. Good night, Larry. God bless you.
Good night, Stan.
Okay, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening has been Larry Pratt. And this is the time we want to remind you, Radio Liberty is listener supported. We're really primarily dependent upon those of you who believe in what we're doing. And if you're not going to get involved, who will be? And if not now, when? Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV war. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. Please remember to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow night, when we'll be back with you again. Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you. Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 4624 Liberty, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24 Liberty or 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us really one of my favorite guests, and we haven't had her on for a long time. That her name is Holly Swanson, and you know I'm convinced that God calls certain people into this battle. And causes them to take a position of leadership, not necessarily because they want to, but because there's nobody else there. And then, of course, as they continue working, they become more and more dedicated to trying to awaken the American people to what's going on. And certainly one of those people is Holly, and she's been at this battle for a long time, written a wonderful book, which we carry, called Set Up and Sold Out, going into the background of the environmental movement, how this whole thing fits into a plan for a one-world government, for the authoritarian state, and call it communism, call it CFRism, call it what you will, it's the loss of freedom, and of course the environmental movement, like a watermelon, green on the outside, but very red on the inside. Hi, Holly, how are you doing?
I am doing good, Dr. Stan. How about you?
I'm doing great. Well, tell me, I haven't heard from you, I guess, in 6 months or so, maybe even longer than that. Are you still out on the campaign trail trying to make people realize there's a problem when they don't want to hear bad news?
Well, absolutely. That's something that we just keep doing. We took some time off to update the book with all the latest information that we've been researching. And then, again, we've been out speaking to different groups, and people are very, very interested in this. I think so many things have happened, and there has been a lot of information out there that I think people really, it's not the happiest news, but I think people are very, very interested in hearing it and helping maybe to solve this problem.
Amen. Now, well, bad news is better than no news at all. It's sort of like halitosis. Bad breath is better than no breath at all. You better understand, ladies and gentlemen, that we've got real, real problems in America, and freedom is lost when good people aren't involved, and right now we can make a difference. When, of course, the camps, which are actually being created by FEMA in case, of course, of a national emergency. You understand it's only in case of national emergency, which they can create at any time. When those programs are activated, and, of course, they have to begin rounding up people in the name of a crisis or an epidemic or what it would be, at that point, we will have lost our ability to communicate. And, of course, freedom as we know it will simply become a remembrance of things past. But, Holly, why don't you tell us the things that you see now that are a real threat to our freedom and how the environmental movement is being used by Gorbachev and, of course, by certainly Marie Strong and Stephen Rockefeller and this whole liberal establishment, both the communist and the capitalist, to take away our freedom.
To encapsulate it, it is a very minority, but it is a very elitist minority movement. The environmental movement basically is something we all care about, the environment. And so it has basically swept through America and had a lot of people jump on the bandwagon. But the leadership of this movement definitely has an ulterior motive, a definite subversive political agenda, which, as you said, it definitely mirrors communism and socialism. And it doesn't matter maybe what you name it in the final analysis, but the bottom line, I think, the greatest threat we face right now is that the Greens basically are hijacking public education. They're in the process of implementing a plan, K through university, from even pre-kindergarten, preschool, to justify changing our education system where we teach math and science and English as separate entities, and using the umbrella Education for Sustainability to infuse into each of those subjects green political values. And the bottom line is that amounts to brainwashing. I mean, there's no other word for it. If a child enters school in kindergarten and all day long as they're learning math, they're learning green political values, and the same in history or what have you, by the time they're to the university, they're just going to be absolutely indoctrinated into the value system of the Green Party. But because it has been presented as somewhat an environmental idea, sustainability, the homework hasn't been done to show that sustainability, interconnectedness, all these ideas are the core principles of the Green Party. It's a very clever but very subversive effort.
You know, one of the most interesting things is the President Bush's No Child Left Behind program incorporates all of these radical environmental views into the very core of this program. Actually, it was Ted Kennedy's bill that was put through by the Bush administration, And people might wonder why that would happen. Well, they say, oh, well, Ted Kennedy outsmarted George Bush. Well, I'm not saying that Ted Kennedy isn't a lot smarter than George Bush, but George Bush knows exactly what he's doing. And, of course, this No Child Left Behind system is beginning to designed to teach a pagan, a pantheistic a religion in our schools today under the name of protecting the environment.
Well, there's definitely a religious and spiritual bent to this in addition to all the ideas of how we need to reinvent our economy, our culture, I mean, basically change everything about America and use education to do it, because as adults, we are pretty much not set in our ways. We're always ready to learn new things and try new things. But if someone were to come along and say, hello, I mean, just for the sake of this, hello, I'm a communist, and I'm going to take away 50% of the land base, and I'm going to turn it into a wilderness area, the American people would stop and say, hey, wait a second. But if it's Dave Foreman and the Wildlands Project, and it's presented under the guise of environmental protection, people aren't paying the same level of attention that they would if they understood that the political agenda does mirror communism. And it's a sad thing, because many, many people are simply involved because they care about the environment. But realistically, the bottom line is we should not have to brainwash our children, we should not have to change our government and give up our freedoms in order to save the environment. And education is a big deal. Stalin, Lenin, Hitler, all of those dictators knew that so go the children, so go the nation. And that's why the Greens are going to school.
Well, Holly was just speaking of a man named David Foreman. Now, so that name is not widely known to those of you who haven't read her book, Say It Up and Sold Out, but we carry that book because we think it's so important. Let me just quote here, briefly, David Foreman created the Earth First Organization. And, of course, he was financed by a group of very, very wealthy men. And according to Holly Swanson, and I'm simply quoting her, David Foreman was asked what he wanted, he replied, and I'm quoting from the book. My three main goals would be to reduce human population to about 100 million worldwide, destroy the industrial infrastructure, and see the wilderness with all its full component of species returning throughout the world. AIDS, and elsewhere he said, AIDS is not a malediction, but the welcome and natural remedy to reduce the population of the planet. Should human beings disappear, I surely wouldn't mind. Mm-hmm. AIDS is not a malediction, but the welcome and natural remedy to reduce the population of the planet. Should human beings disappear, I surely wouldn't mind. Maybe that's why today, of course, with a failed public health policy in Africa, with over 70 million people either infected or dead from this disease, we still continue passing out condoms and collecting statistics on what a great job we're doing stopping or maybe not stopping the epidemic. And most people don't understand who really monitors the world AIDS epidemic, the U.S. Census Bureau. Why are we monitoring the incidence of AIDS in Africa, the U.S. Census Bureau? Well, very simply, we want to see what a great job we're doing. And we are doing a great job. And they're dying by the millions and millions throughout the world today of an unnecessary epidemic. Well, that's a little off the subject, but this is the mentality of one of the leaders of this whole environmental movement. I'm speaking specifically of David Foreman. Is he still out there creating problems and doing everything he can to destroy Western civilization?
Well, what the Wildlands Project, and that's what he's the director of, I believe, right now, is the Wildlands Project, and I'm sure your listeners may know, but just to recap, is the goal to take 50% of the land base in the United States and make it off limits to humans and a place where the wild creatures can roam again. In other words, basically wherever there were grizzly bears at one time, put grizzly bears back. And you have to, of course, move people around in order to do that. And one of the ways that they're creating these corridors is through conservation easements. And I've just heard recently of a 13,000-acre ranch in California that granted a conservation easement. And what a conservation easement is and why it's so important is that it's a part of your property that is assigned to an environmental group or a government agency or what have you, and you get some kind of a tax break for doing this. But then in perpetuity, from now until forever, amen, it is not your property per se. You're sharing the title. And bottom line is conservation easements take the private out of private property. Because you're sharing the title, it lowers your property value, and that piece of property then will be managed by whomever you assign that to or whomever they assign that to. And the idea is using conservation easements. It's one of the things that they were talking about at the latest Wildlands conference was how to use conservation easements to connect the dots, basically, for the wildlands corridors throughout the United States.
Now, would you explain what the wildlands corridor is for our listeners out there who don't understand that the wildlands project is to take half of the land in the United States and turn it into wilderness, and that will be connected by corridors. Is that right?
Well, basically, yes. And in other words, where you have Forest Service or BLM lands already established or wilderness areas established, the idea of the conservation easements is ways to connect those dots. In other words, you may have a huge area, say in Montana, but maybe you need 2 miles or 4 miles in order to connect the dot to the next, maybe, BLM land strip. Well, if you can get private property owners to assign conservation easements, then you would allow that as a corridor, you know, like a great big hallway in throughout the United States.
And that's where where the grizzly bears and the cougars can go from one area to another.
Exactly, and people are doing this, again, because the American people are some of the most giving people in the whole world, and people are doing this because they feel they're saving the property.
But of course, they really don't understand the major purpose behind it, I think, was laid out by David Foreman. We want to destroy industrialized society. We want to destroy Western civilization. That's what it's really all about. And you say that's madness. But of course, we're not dealing with rational people. They have a different worldview. Would that be a fair statement, Holly?
I think that there is definitely a fanatical bent to where the environmental movement is headed. One of the things I pointed out in the book, and I do think is very sad, is we have young men and women out sitting in trees, hundreds of feet off the ground, and not everything turns out peachy, like Julia Butterfly Hill. And some of these kids are falling from these trees and dying because they feel this fanatical commitment to save the trees. One of the young men in one of the Earth First camps actually even, quote-unquote, had a marriage ceremony with one of the trees in the forest that they had named Grandma. And the point is that the emotional attachment is just being played up. People are getting hurt, and the fanatical part of it is a big concern, because literally, if we think back to the psychological way that Hitler manipulated people, he used their love of nature and saving the sacred soil to bring people on board there also, and many people there innocently got on the bandwagon and didn't realize that the end goal included a reduction in the population, and end goal was complete social transformation. They didn't realize when their kids went to school that they were writing these things on the blackboard and brainwashing the kids in school. And again, this idea of education for sustainability, in America, we don't put a political ideology into every subject area. But Hitler did, Lenin did, that's how they brainwash kids. And that's what this whole education for sustainability is about. It's about infusing the base political ideas and values of the Green Party, Green Movement, into every subject in school. And those poor kids won't be able to get away from it.
But I think it's so important, Holly, that people understand that a lot of these ideas came out of the Club of Rome, some of the wealthiest men in the world.
I've heard that, yes.
Those powerful people, and back in 1972, they published a report called Limits of Growth, in which they said we're running out of natural resources, there are too many people in the world, mm-hmm. and the only way the Earth is going to survive is dramatic reduction in population, dramatic reduction in consumption, and sustainability. In other words, we have to, if we're going to use up all the natural resources, we're going to run out of all these things, so we need sustainable development. By sustainable development, they really meant a controlled development. Everything would be controlled by smart people like them.
Well, yes, and of course Ted Turner, I do quote Ted Turner in the book. One of the things that Ted Turner said, and again why I say it's a minority but elitist movement, is he said basically, and I may paraphrase just a bit, back in 1999, and he was interviewed in regard to his leadership in the Green Movement, and he said basically that he thought they were smarter than the dumb majority. You know, they were better educated, and And again, that goes right with the idea that there's a small group of people that know what's best for us, and they're using the environment as an excuse to gain control of our lives.
The thing is that he is looking down upon the average person in the environmental movement. They're simply the stormtroopers in this whole elitist movement, and they're using the idealism of so many people, you know, or anti-establishment, without realizing they're carrying out the establishment's plan, which, of course, is the total disruption of industrialized society.
I think it was Dave Foreman that said, and again, he was also one of the co-founders of Earth First. He said that, I think the Earth First slogan is visualize industrial collapse.
Industrial collapse.
Yes, that's it, and also subvert the dominant paradigm, which is to basically change the governing model, change what we have right now and put in something new. And one of our greatest challenges on radio programs such as this, and whether we're on the road speaking, is to help the American people understand that basically there is a con job going on here. We do have some issues to deal with, there's no question, but overall, like you said, the limits to growth back in 1972, we have been set up to believe that everything is getting worse. The tampering with nature program that John Stossel put on 2020 ABC a couple of years ago, he documented that indeed our natural resources and our pollution and these things, our water quality was improving. But when he asked kids about this, the kids all yelled back to him, no, they're lying. And so the predominant message that's been out there is what people are believing, and that's our challenge to literally interrupt that pattern and say, you got to pay attention to the facts, because we were talking about it just the other day as we were driving to an out-of-town event and just looking at the environment. And I don't know how many times we have driven down that particular road and looked at the trees for some, 20-odd years. And nothing has changed. It's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. And if you were to believe everything that the Greens say, it's all doom and gloom. And that's unfortunately what the kids are believing.
And, of course, they object to cutting the trees in the forest. And then, of course, the fires come and burn them out. And it'll take, a generation to regrow what was never should have been lost. If those forests had been properly taken care of and they get the dead growth out of there, they never would have had the terrible, terrible fires that they've had to clear out the underbrush. And that, of course, what the people do. Not clear cutting, but selective lumbering, a logical way to do it. And the other trees then can get larger, get more sunlight. But, of course, nothing in this whole movement is logical. Everything really is aimed at destruction, and how easy it is to mobilize young people in the name of being against the establishment. Of course, what they really don't know is who's funding this whole environmental movement.
No, and I think that's another sad point, because the one other thing, and I've talked to a lot of young people, and it's unfortunate, but what you just said, the anti-establishment and this message that it isn't that there's something amiss that we need to correct, and so we can go over here and we can put our energy into finding the best way to correct a problem. What's happening to our young people is that it is being painted that, everything about the environment is kaput. Everything about the government is kaput. It's bad clear through, and that's throwing the baby out with the bathwater, and that's not the American way. But unfortunately, many of these kids, they are kids, and they don't have the life experience to understand when they're being told at a very young age that, like, for example, there's a quote in the book from a young woman who is part of the Earth Day Network, and I believe she's 18. And one of the things that she said, and this is just paraphrasing, excuse me, I don't have the book right, the quote right here, but is that the Earth is being destroyed faster than ever. But according to the facts, that's not true.
No, but of course, they believe in the ozone hole. They believe in global warming. They believe in acid rain. They believe in all of these. They believe we're running out of water. The Earth is running out of water.
Because that's what they're being told over and over and over and over.
It doesn't matter how ridiculous something is. If you're told often enough, people will believe.
That's
they're not
right.
Out of water.
That's right.
They're blocking efforts to build the dams and the reservoirs and protect the water so we don't have saltwater intrusion.
Taking out the dams.
Right.
Yeah, let's take out the dams.
And, of course, the average person cannot believe that they're intentionally creating the problems. And, of course, the solution to the problem is always more regulation, more control, taking away more property rights. And these young people, of course, are educated far beyond their intelligence. Somebody once recently said, it was attributed to the Wizard of Oz, I don't know who he said it, he said, I can't give you a brain, but I can give you a diploma. And I think that says a lot about our educational system.
Well, there's so many kids out there, and many of them are university age, and they really believe in what they're doing. And what they're doing, part of what they're doing, is a good thing, thinking about how to improve things. But the other aspect of taking it to a fanatical end, you know, revolution, change our government, you know, throw everything aside and do things completely different, that's the part I don't agree with, especially when that solution mirrors communism. And even Al Gore said, and I enjoyed rereading part of Earth in the Balance and finding the quote, where he said basically that it's no accident that the environment has been in worse conditions in communist countries than any other place. And so, I mean, taking a tip from that alone, it's not something that we don't know. Those of us who have studied this may not know. But why on earth, given that's the case, and given the mentality and what has happened in Russia, why in the world would we want to do that?
Why would we allow Gorbachev to have offices at the Presidio, travel around our country, set up organizations like his State of the World Forum, and incidentally, one of the first men who was a member of the board of the State of the World Forum was a man named George Shultz, who has recently been appointed number two man in the Arnold Schwarzenegger campaign.
He
tells us a lot about Arnold Schwarzenegger, or who's really behind Arnold. So, I mean, people just don't understand. There's something wrong when Gorbachev, who headed the Soviet Union, who was head of the KGB and then became head of the Soviet Union, now he's one of the leaders of America and the free world. And, of course, pushing this whole environmental movement with the good help of some of the wealthiest men in the world. In fact, men like Maurice Strong, who was a member of the Club of Rome when they came out with the Limits of Growth report. And, of course, Stephen Rockefeller, the leader of the Rockefeller clan, when David Rockefeller dies. And if you haven't read Stephen Rockefeller's book, Science and Nature, you need to get it. Just look at the pictures. And, of course, if you want to see evil personified, why, you'll see it in those pictures in Stephen Rockefeller's book, Science and Nature.
Well, there's so much information out there. Some of it you have to dig to get. But in general, I think once the American people understand that they have been hoodwinked, I do believe the sleeping giant will awaken.
Well, how are you doing with your greenout program?
Well, we're doing good. We have Earth Day out of one school. We're building momentum to really make a difference this year. I think our focus right now is still getting green politics out in the open and alerting as many people as we can that our children are on the line. And when you mentioned Gorbachev and the Earth Charter, well, of course, education for sustainability, the whole idea of that is to incorporate the Earth Charter and the principles of the Earth Charter, which amount to Gorbachev's principles that mirror communism, being taught in our classrooms.
Amen.
And it's an amazing thing when you look at the groups that have signed on to the Earth Charter and are helping Gorbachev implement this. And just let me read this for your listeners who may not realize just how deeply involved the environmental groups are in this. The groups that have signed on and that are helping Mr. Gorbachev include the Earth Day Network, the Sierra Club, the National Wildlife Federation, Friends of the Earth, the Natural Resource Defense Council, the Wilderness Society, the Wildlands Project, Rainforest Action Network, World Resource Institute, the Earth Council, that's Marie Strong's group, University Leaders for a Sustainable Future, the Student Environmental Action Coalition, and more. And these are basically groups that many in America trust and would not realize that they were working to change our government and basically build a green regime in the process of supposedly just working to change save the environment.
Well, of course, the other interesting thing is that Earth Day is celebrated at schools all across America.
Mm-hmm.
Every year we celebrate Earth Day, and this is a very, very special day in the school year because, of course, it gets into environmentalism and our efforts to save the Earth, but Whose birthday is Earth Day?
It's on Lenin's birthday.
It's on Lenin's birthday. Ladies and gentlemen, they laugh at how stupid the American people are. I mean, why doesn't Barbara Walters or Dan Rather or Tom Brokaw or any of the people on 2020, talk, Jane Pauley or, these people, why don't they tell us it's Lenin's birthday? This whole thing is a scam. In fact, communism has always been a scam. Of course, it's always been financed from its very inception by wealthy people in the United States. And of course, because why? Because Lenin was a successful dictator, and that is the ultimate goal. That's why they have there at the headquarters of the Council on Foreign Relations is 58 68th Street in New York City, a copy of Foreign Affairs magazine, the most treasured possession. It was the copy that Lenin read and wrote in the margin on. Oh, they even have it under glass there so everybody can see it. Why? Because Lenin was such a great guy, this mass murderer who was revered by the leaders of the men who control both of our political parties in the CFR. So people have to understand that this whole environmental movement is really being funded by some of the great foundations, by many of our great industries. And, of course, until you understand that, for instance, the General Motors recently gave, 20 or 30 SVUs to the Nature's Conservatory so you go out and check the forest. Why would General Motors give SVUs to the Nature Conservatory, which, of course, is opposing the use of the automobile? It just doesn't make sense unless, of course, nothing really makes sense unless you understand there is a motivation behind what they're doing.
Well, there's definitely a political motivation, and it definitely is about power and control. It is not about pollution. It is not about the environment. And after studying this for many moons, I can say that very confidently. And I mean, you've been studying it a lot longer than I have. But if those listening, just think about the one thing you mentioned earlier, Stan, is that the forest issue. When the trees were being selectively cut, and the forests were being managed well, we did not have these catastrophic fires. And although the Greens say, oh, well, that's terrific, it'll come back. Well, yeah, it'll come back. But they lost.
A generation or more.
Well, yes. And how about the creatures? Where was PETA? How about all the creatures that were lost and trapped because those two fires joined? I mean, if you care about the environment, then you care about many of the pieces that go with it. And it's not logical that save the spotted owl, and we're going to set off all these wilderness areas to save the spotted owl. And then as the fire approaches all these spotted owl habitats, we'll just let it burn.
Of course, maybe you're Georgia Pacific, one of the largest, of course, timber companies in the country, financing so much of the environmentalism, because by cutting the lumber on the government land makes your lumber so much more valuable.
Well, see, and you have to ask yourself how many of these fires started. And then again, of course, you have the bark beetle and all these other things that are happening. And I think when we get back to some common sense, I don't know who wrote the book, The Death of Common Sense, but when we get back to some common sense with the environment, I think it'll be very clear to people.
And I think that the major thing, Holly, is how do we reach large numbers of people? And, of course, you go out into communities and you talk in schools, you talk to everybody that you possibly can, and mm-hmm. we do as well. Of course, we've got to, of course, bring the people to listen to our programs, and that's why you and the listening audience have to get other people listening and get them to encourage others to listen. If you're out listening on the Internet, get people, of course, going onto the Internet to get the information. And then check the facts out. Holly Swanson's book, Set Up and Sold Out. If you'd like to learn more about how to get it, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Holly Swanson. Her book, Set Up and Sold Out, and it's must reading for anybody who really wants to understand what's going on today. And then if you'd like to get Holly to possibly come to your area to speak, how can people get in touch with you personally, Holly?
They can send an email on the website, which is greenout.org, www.greenout.org, or just call the campaign line, and that is 541-830-1446. Let me repeat that. It's 541-830-1446.
All right, fine. That's 541-830-1446. And of course, Holly and her husband are really on the front lines of this battle, trying to make the people, American people, understand that most of what you are told by the media just is not true. And of course, you've got to find out the facts about global warming. Why? Well, the New York Times says it's a scientific fact. I mean, they point out to this UN study. Well, what they don't tell you, the UN study is cooked, and the people who are on this this international committee didn't agree with the conclusion that was put out by the politicians. But of course, then they want you to believe in the acid rain, and yet of course the government spent $500 million proving this was not a non-issue, and they still passed all the legislation. Of course, they've outlawed DDT, which allows, of course, the mosquitoes to come back, and it's killing millions of people in Africa and throughout the world, totally unnecessarily, but it's great for population control. And now we've got the West Nile virus, and the safest thing, the safest way to handle it would be, of course, DDT. Oh, we can't do that. No, let's use the most toxic thing we can possibly have to kill those mosquitoes to protect the American people. I mean, the whole thing is organized madness. If you understand it's organized madness.
Organized madness, that's terrific.
At that point, it all begins to make sense. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you agree or disagree. Maybe you really think we're in a terrible environmental crisis, and of course the only solution is to massively limit the population. There's a fellow walking across America today, just trying to convince everybody about the population problem. Well, let me tell you, Europe is dying off because they're not producing enough children. The only people producing enough children today are the people in the Arab countries. And, of course, they're soon going to outnumber a number of people in the European countries. It's only a matter of time. And they'll be speaking Arabic, in Paris rather than French.
Well, that's an interesting one. I hadn't heard that statistic.
Oh, yeah. I mean, actually, if you will look at the Population Research Institute statistics, of the average... I see it takes 2.1 children per family to reproduce the population. In France, it's 1.4 children per family. In Italy, it's 1.2 children per family. In Germany, it's 1.3 children per family. In Russia, it's 1.2 children per family. In Russia, they're actively encouraging women to have children because they know that Russia is dying off.
That's interesting. That's very interesting. I wanted to comment, too, if I could. You were talking about global warming, and one of the things that I found most interesting is there was a big ad. We had talked about CNN media mogul Ted Turner and his involvement in funding many of these organizations. And there was a big ad in USA Today, and it was a CNN, the most trusted name in news. And that particular ad caught my eye because in the book, and this happens to be on page 391, I quoted a Dr. Richard Lindzen, who is a professor of meteorology at MIT and a member of the National Academy of Sciences, who is reviewing that Kyoto Treaty on Global Warming. And he wrote an article on June 11th, 2001, and it was titled, "The Press Gets It Wrong. Our Report Doesn't Support the Kyoto Treaty." And then he goes on to explain how CNN interpreted and reported that report there to the American people. He said, "CNN's Michelle Mitchell was typical of the coverage when she declared that the report represented a unanimous decision that global warming is real, is getting worse, and is due to man. There is no wiggle room." He said, that's the end of his quote about her, and then he said, "As one of the 11 scientists who prepared the report, I can state that this is simply untrue. Our primary conclusion was that despite some knowledge and agreement, the science is by no means settled. I cannot stress this enough. We are not in a position to confidently attribute past climate change to carbon dioxide or to forecast what the climate will be in the future. So the question you must ask is, how could CNN make such a big mistake?"
Well,
go ahead. Yeah. Obviously, it's not a mistake. It's a misrepresentation of the facts to the American people, and that's not the first time this has happened. And I don't know the report. I believe I pronounced this correctly. This was in the Intellectual Activist, a December 2002 article written by Keith Locklitch, and it was in regard to the Skeptical Environmentalist book and Bjorn Lomborg. And he, the author of that particular article said, to environmentalists, their desire to save the planet from human activity supersedes any concern for the facts, and they have no compunction about inventing the imaginary threats from which it supposedly needs to be saved. The figure that is quoted repeatedly is that species are vanishing at a rate of 40,000 per year. The 40,000 number turns out to be pure fiction, invented by acclaimed environmentalist Norman Myers in his 1979 book, The Sinking Ark. Myers himself openly acknowledges that it was advanced primarily to get the issue of extinction onto scientific and political agenda. After grudgingly admitting that Myers' number was pulled out of thin air, one of the reviewers for Scientific American said, nevertheless, he deserves credit for being the first to say that the number was large.
And, of course, I think what you have to understand is the purpose of the Kyoto Protocol was the destruction of the industrial infrastructure of the United States. That was really the purpose for it, and they knew that because, of course, the greatest polluter in the world today is Communist China, and they aren't even included in the controls of the Kyoto Protocol.
Now, the United States is the primary one that would have to make some magnificent changes.
And, of course, you know, of course, Europe doesn't have to because they have massive amounts of nuclear energy. Why don't we have nuclear energy here? Oh, it's so expensive. Why is it so expensive? Because, of course, the environmentalists, every time they tried to build a nuclear plant, would launch lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit, financed by people like Ted Turner and Ben and Jerry's Ice Cream, and, of course, many of our large corporations, and by government grants, and by the Rockefeller and Ford and Carnegie Foundation, which are financing this whole thing, and the myriad of other foundations, the Hewlett-Packard Foundation. And, of course, what is this all about? It is an attack on Western civilization. Why do they want to destroy it? Because they hate it. Why? Because, of course, Western civilization is built upon Christian values. And, of course, this is an anti-Christian movement. And, of course, the primary motivation behind this is paganism. And, of course, there's these pagan beliefs. And you read the things that they're teaching in our schools today. I mean, they'll make your blood run cold. The fact that we're all one with nature, one with the rocks and one with the trees and one with the animals and one with the insects. And we're all one with nature. And God is in everything. And we are God. And you could see Shirley MacLaine running down the beach, you know, with the waves crashing around her screaming, I am God, I am God. And you say that's in madness. Unfortunately, this is what we're infecting the minds of our children with an intense hatred of our society, with the belief that there are too many people in the world and they're just going to have to be eliminated. And that was exactly the same sort of beliefs they instilled in the German soldiers who shot the Nazis, but you must, pardon me, shot the Jews. You must understand that it wasn't 6 million Jews who died. There were 12 million others who died in the concentration camps and the death camps of Hitler's Germany. And the source of that would be the book Warrant for Genocide, written by Norman Cohn, a Jewish scholar, and we quote that in my Population Control Agenda monograph. But when you understand, they never mentioned the 12 million others in America. Why? Because they don't want the Christians here to be upset. They want you to believe what your church is telling you. Oh, nothing bad's going to happen. You're going to be raptured out of here before anything bad happens. And that's exactly what they told the German people back in the 1930s and 40s. They also preached the Romans 13 there, just like they're preaching it in our churches here today. And if you want to verify that, get Erwin Lutzer's wonderful book, Hitler's Cross. Erwin Lutzer, senior pastor at the Moody Bible Church in Chicago, Hitler's Cross, and they'll tell you how they used or misused Romans 13 and Hitler's Germany, just as it's being misused in America. Go ahead, Holly.
Oh, no, I think that's very interesting. That's a fact I did not know. And I think that, obviously, in the book, I do a comparison between how the tactics and the ideas that the Greens are using and how they did, that does mirror the psychological manipulation that Hitler used on people. And it's most interesting. It's sad, but it's very interesting, and I think that one of the things that you mentioned just a moment ago is something that I think is very important to note, and that is that if indeed this was about the environment, if indeed this was just about cleaning things up and doing things better, why then would it need to change everything about America? I mean, the Greens are now calling, the Earth Charter calls to, for us to change our government, change our values, change our behavior, and Gorbachev has referred to the Earth Charter as a kind of a new Ten Commandments, and that kind of gives you a clear line. It's a defined as a set of rules for all of us to follow. And when you think about the United States and the fact that, yeah, we've made a few mistakes, but pretty much our environment's in great shape. So if it was just really about the environment, all these other aspects of our lives, our values, belief systems, traditions, private property, all these things would not need to come under attack, because private property is the cornerstone. I mean, where do you find most endangered species? On private property, because private property, many people that own private property take care of the land, and that's where the animals go. And so I guess the bottom line is, as we look at this whole thing, is that there's one discrepancy after the other. And one of the largest discrepancies that we've talked about before is not just the species extinction, but we've been led to believe that Mikhail Gorbachev left the Soviet Union due to the coup. And yet, papers for the Gorbachev Foundation were filed with the California Secretary of State 4 months before his supposed disposition from power.
You're not suggesting, Holly, you're not suggesting that this whole thing was contrived, that Gorbachev actually had taken out his papers here in California for the Gorbachev Foundation 4 months before the phony coup that was broadcast on television to convince the American people that communism was dead?
Well, it certainly looks that way.
And you have the
papers? The fact certainly looks that way.
You actually have the papers, don't you?
Oh, I absolutely do, yes. And the interesting part about that also is not only did Gorbachev know where he was going, he was coming to California, but in addition, he had funding from the Rockefellers, the Pew Charitable Trust, and the Ford Foundation. So he had money already lined up, and as we all know, that takes a little bit of planning. That doesn't happen overnight to have the Gorbachev Foundation funded. He went from there to meeting with the environmental groups to be their spokesperson, and from there, here we are today. He is considered one of the leaders in the environmental movement internationally, and the Earth Charter is his pet project, along with Marie Strong. These groups that I read off earlier are all supporting that, and our challenge again, and we could not do it without radio programs such as this, is to alert the American people that not only is this really a hoax about environmental protection, but your children, whether they're in kindergarten or middle school, high school, or the university, are the targets of this indoctrination process that they're promoting under the guise of environmental protection, sustainability, and if we don't make sure that this does not get into the curriculum and green values, green political values taught in every subject in school, our children cannot escape being brainwashed, and how can we ever explain that?
And, of course, how can you convince the child that they have been lied to in school? And I think you have to realize our schools are not used to educate, they're used to indoctrinate. That's why Karl Marx in the Communist Manifesto written in 1848 said, a free public education for every child. Why? Because that's what it was all about, to control their minds and to destroy their belief in God and in family and country. And this, of course, was... Holly is talking about, you know, this whole thing of Gorbachev planning to come to the United States long before, 3 or 4 months before the phony coup over there. And how many times have you gone to a meeting or heard somebody say, communism is dead, communism is dead, communism is dead, we won the Cold War. And yet there are 1.25 billion people in communist China, and certainly communist North Vietnam, communist Vietnam, communist North Korea, communist Cuba. And what most people don't understand is Venezuela is now a communist country. El Salvador will probably be going communist here in the next few months. Brazil is under the control of a hardline Marxist, and many of the other adjacent countries will soon be going that direction. So Rhodesia is under the control of a man named Mugabe, who's a lifelong communist. The Southwest Africa is under the control of a lifelong communist. Angola is under the control of the communists. The Congo Civil War has to do with communism. The war there in Liberia, I mean, who is Charles Taylor? Charles Taylor is an American who was trained by Gaddafi, who was and they are, of course, a Soviet satellite. And, of course, this is all about communism. When did you last read about that in any of your newspapers? And, of course, South Africa, the African National Congress, is a communist organization. It always has, and we brought them to power. We brought Nelson Mandela to power. But, of course, we convinced the American people that communism is dead. And, you know, it doesn't matter how ridiculous something is. If you say it often enough, people come to believe. And today, of course, they have 250,000 KGB agents in Russia, communist agents. The Russian military is under the control of the communists. And, of course, Putin was a member of the KGB. What does that suggest to you about what's going on in Russia today? Every one of the independent states of Russia is under the control of a former communist dictator. And now, of course, they are still under the sway of this whole world movement. And they've convinced the American people that communism is dead. We have nothing to worry about as we adapt point after point after point of the Marxist control right here in America.
It is right here in America. And I think that one of the greatest things is to write straight from the horse's mouth. Nikita Khrushchev said in 1956, each year humanity takes a step towards communism. Maybe not you, but in all events, your grandson will surely be a communist. Well, hello. Here we are today. And he also said, Khrushchev said, that we'll take you over from within without firing a single shot. If they get our children and our property rights and change our government under the guise of sustainability, they've pretty much got the job done.
Yeah, and of course, that's why they're so anxious to take the guns away from the American people. And why would our elite be going along with this? Because they see nothing wrong. Communism has nothing to do with redistributing the wealth. It's, of course, taking the wealth away from the middle class, impoverishing them, and, of course, a ruling elite. That's what communism is really about. They have a ruling elite in Russia. They have a ruling elite in China. They have a ruling elite in North Korea. They have a ruling elite in Vietnam. They have a ruling elite in Cuba. And they have a ruling elite in Washington, D.C.
And if you know, when you put look at the whole, one of the things that Ronald Reagan said one time was, and again, it's a paraphrase of his quote, but it was something to the effect that Americans were not meant to be mediocre. We were meant to go out there and excel and achieve. And what this whole green movement is about just, if this, as if they're trying to get this into the schools, one of my greatest concerns is stealing not just the hearts and minds of our children, but their dreams. Because according to the Greens, you need to live a sustainable future, you need to have your basic needs met, you need to work for the good of the community and what have you. And in the book, I document how these goals of the Green Party and the Green Movement mirror exactly the same line that the Communist Party used to convince the Russian people to go along with this idea. And it's ludicrous, but people are listening, though, Stan. When we go out on the road, people are listening, they are paying attention, and it gives me a great deal of hope.
Well, I hope that, of course, they are listening, and tell them to listen to Radio Liberty, too.
Yes.
When they're not listening to you, reading your book, because we just need to get the good people out across America, beginning to understand how this all fits together, and you're not going to get this from most of our conservative leaders or even most of our conservative radio programs, because, of course, so many of them have simply going along with the establishment. You go along, you get along, you make a lot of money that way, but, of course, in the final analysis, if freedom fails, why, nothing will really be of any significance.
That's right. That's right. And you mentioned earlier the goal to change targeting organized religion, which, of course, is one of the things that Karl Marx said, was that organized religion, I believe it was Karl Marx, the opiate of the people.
Right.
Yes. And when you look at the direction the Greens are going right now, it's very definitely, I mean, targeting religion and the idea to change that, because many of the, and I have several quotes in the book, but many of the statements made are around the idea that the Western view, the Western religion is somehow, because the idea that God gave man dominion over the creatures. Well, that doesn't translate into cruelty, for Pete's sake, but the way it's being presented to youth is somehow that does translate into cruelty, and therefore the only fair thing to do for the animals is that we are at one with the animals. And you know, when you think about, even if you have a dog that you love, well, when the dog gets sick, you take that dog to the vet as a responsible pet owner, and you take care of it. Because the dog doesn't necessarily know what's wrong with it or how to fix it. It's no different with a horse or a cow. And yet, if we were not in that position, if we're equal to the animals, we wouldn't be able to do that. And so it's really not a good plan.
Well, it's pretty hard to coexist with a grizzly bear.
And well, yeah.
I think I've been thinking what we ought to try to do is find out if there are any wolves in Washington, D.C., and of course, maybe take a few of them there. And, of course, this would be, they'd probably feel right at home with the legislators. Well, anyway, of course, our guest this evening is Holly Swanson. Our, of course, telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But Holly is talking to people all across America, and specifically her Operation Green Out is to get the green agenda out of our high schools.
And our elementary schools. Boy, they're targeting K through university, Stan.
And, of course, when you talk to educators, do any of them realize what's happening? Are any of them concerned? Are any of the school boards really concerned?
Oh, absolutely. We have calls from teachers' aides, that after they hear a radio program or have an opportunity to address a group, teachers call and say, my goodness, this is what's happening, but I didn't know. And I think that's a big deal, because it's not that people don't care. It's that they don't know. And so when we can, I think it was Metcalf. Jeff Metcalf used to say, tell 10 that would tell 10.
Right.
And that's really what we need people to do, is to get involved, not only listen to Radio Liberty, but and all the information that is out there, because there's so much out there, but to also get involved in your communities for what you can do, because everybody can do something to help alert the teachers in their elementary school, their junior high, their high school, their college, their superintendent, the school board. There's many people. And the facts are so clear. I mean, there's no question it's brainwashing. Do you have any question that's what they're doing?
No, absolutely not. They're indoctrinating, brainwashing, call it what you will.
Yeah.
They're controlling what your children think, and they're turning them against this idea of freedom under God, towards the all-powerful state that must regulate everything in the name of sustainable development.
Yes. Sustainability, education for sustainability, those are the green buzzwords, along with the Earth Charter, to really, really watch for. And, of course, coming up in October, we have the big swing for the Earth Charter summits to be going on in San Francisco and all across the country, again, building support for the Earth Charter. And
now, when is this going to be?
That should be October, in like October 9th or 10th.
And what is it going? Who's putting it on?
Well, they have the Earth Charter Community Summits. If you go to earthchartersummits.org on the Internet,
mm-hmm.
It has a list of, and again, that's earthchartersummits.org.
Mm-hmm.
You can look it up, and it will tell all the cities that they're planning to have a summit in. I know that they're planning to have one in Portland, Oregon, and basically it's an idea to go to the community and have a celebration, much like an Earth Day celebration, only call it an Earth Charter celebration, and again, bring people into the idea of promoting and supporting the Earth Charter.
And I think that it's very important that the purpose of the Earth Charter is to be a replacement for the Ten Commandments. It has been placed in the Ark of Hope, which, of course, is a counterfeit Ark of the Covenant. And everything we're seeing, of course, is a mirror image of the Christian story. These people believe in the story of the Bible, except, of course, they hate it, and they hate everything that God represents, because, of course, all of the people, and I'm including Gorbachev, are deeply involved in the occult. And anybody who wants, of course, to get a copy of a page out of James Billington's book, James H. Billington, the Library of Congress, tells about how, of course, he was, riding to the airport in Russia with a high Russia official who commented to him, well, of course, things were going pretty well here in Russia until Gorbachev went to London and was indoctrinated into a secret Masonic lodge by Margaret Thatcher. Now, I can't tell. All I can tell you what James H. Billington wrote in his book, and the fact you're never being told that, Gorbachev, a Masonic lodge, Margaret Thatcher, I mean, the Iron Lady, I mean, what's this all about? And, of course, until you understand that there really are a secret and occult societies out there, why else would Mikhail Gorbachev be working with Marie Strong, whose wife is a witch, and Marie Strong deeply involved in the occult, and, of course, Stephen Rockefeller, the same, read his book, Science and Nature, and, of course, they have a picture of Gaia there, Mother Earth, that, of course, would frighten any school child if you were to see that appearing in your window. And of course, these people have a different agenda, a different worldview, and an intense hatred of Judeo-Christian civilization. So you must understand, you need to get the information out, and I think that's fascinating, and we'll have to see if we can get some people to go up. Will you be there at that Earth Summit, or are you going to wait till they put one up in your area?
Well, there should be, they're having them in multiple cities. There's probably about 10 or 15 different cities where they'll be holding this, and the idea, of course, is just to make it seem bigger than it is and show some support for the Earth Charter, and really that's, if they have one, you know, definitely I may be attending if I'm not out on the road doing something else.
Now, who is really behind this? Who's putting up the money for it? Do we know?
Oh, yes. If you go to that organization, you will see that their partners in promoting these summits include Yes Magazine, the Wilderness Society, I believe Friends of the Earth. There's a whole list there of environmental groups that are supporting it.
All right, fine. Well, we'll certainly have to look up that.
Yes.
EarthCharterSummit.org.
Yes.
EarthCharterSummit.org. Get that information. Help us to get information out. Wouldn't it be nice if there were some people there who were pointing out that the goal of the Earth Charter, first of all, is to destroy American sovereignty, to destroy the industrial infrastructure of America, and, of course, to replace it with this new pagan belief that these people espouse.
Well, you know, I think that one of the things, and you do know this, and that's why I've paraphrased it that way, is that in everybody listening this evening that is not familiar with the Earth Charter, it, as Gorbachev refers to it, it is his, you know, as the new Ten Commandments, but they say specifically in their information, Gorbachev says the Earth Charter is a set of rules for governments, individuals, businesses to obey. And that is exactly what it is. And it would change America, basically, from the top down. And that's, of course, the goal. It's not about protecting the environment, because we do not need to go to these extremes to change our government, give up our freedom, brainwash our children. We do not need to do that to save the environment. And until people stop to think for 1 second that we don't need to do that to save the environment, people are simply going along with it because it's being presented as a spontaneous idea. But as you mentioned, limits to growth, these type of things, it's been going on for a long, long time. And you also did one of the original interviews with Norman Dodd.
Right.
And again, that's you can quote that better than me, but the idea
of our Ford Foundation is to so alter life in America that one day we can be peacefully merged with the Soviet Union. And
that's
operating under a presidential directive to accomplish that goal. And you can hear that interview, of course, in our Secret Government 4 tape set. Hey, we're out of time, Holly. It's always a pleasure.
Yes.
Again, let's get your website out so people can get in touch with you.
Again, that's greenout, www.greenout.org, or the direct line. You can call 541-830-1446. 541-830-1446.
Support Holly. Support what CW is doing. They're giving their life. What are you willing to give? God bless you, Holly. Thanks so
you
much.
Too.
Give my best to your husband.
Yes, bye-bye. And you have a great evening.
I will. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I'm Dr. Stan saying, and he'll pray for America. Pray for our leaders, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, when we'll be back with you with another exciting program, may the Lord be with you.